Welcome back to Paris Lesbos, the most fabulous podcast in the world. And today we're doing The Muse of Violets, a renowned poet of La Belle Époque Paris, and the tragic girlfriend of Natalie Barney, whose affair spawned a legend across the internet. It's Renee Vivian.
Who? No, seriously, who was she?
That's what this episode is about.
So where do we begin with this fine lady?
We begin in England in 1877, where she's born as Pauline Tarn. Renee Vivian is actually her pseudonym.
Ooh, already a mysterious figure.
She has an American mother and a British father who is the heir to a merchant fortune.
So already we're seeing, like many of her contemporaries, she is wealthy.
Yes, she is. Another heiress. However, her family moves rather quickly to Paris, where she grows up.
Ooh, so she has an in with the Paris crowd.
Yes, it's where she meets her friends, the Shaletto sisters, who we will see more of later.
Foreshadowing.
It is also where her younger sister Antoinette is born. It is where, at the age of 6, she started to write stories to amuse herself.
Already a member of the artistic community of Paris.
I wouldn't go that far, more like introverted child with an imagination.
Mm-hmm. I mean, aren't we all?
Yes, but in 1886, at the age of 9, her father dies.
Mm-hmm. As so many of these women, her life is marked by tragedy.
Yes, his fortune, though, is held in trust for both his daughters till they marry or until they turn 21. Now, her mother moved her and her younger sister from Paris back to England, where her in-laws were her husband's, now dead husband's, family, so that she could keep their purse strings open.
Ooh, always a good reason to be making a major family move. How did this affect Renee?
She hated England.
Yeah, I can imagine that kind of upheaval when you're that young.
Yeah. She says that she misses France, the French language, and her friend Violet Shaletto. So we have an already introverted child become even more introverted. She actually spends her teen years focused on music and writing. And she probably would have been a pianist if she hadn't found writing so early.
Ooh, so a multi-talented young lady.
Yes, she was very good at piano. Even played for Natalie Barney once.
Ooh. Well, so let's get to that. So how did she and Natalie meet?
We're not there yet. We have some other drama that occurs first.
Mm-hmm.
Involving her correspondence with the French poet Amédée Moël.
Ooh. Yes, so she is recognized in an artistic community.
I would not go that far. It's more a correspondence of encouragement on her poetry. However, he proposes.
Right, because you just can't have male friends, can you?
Not according to a certain subreddit, and not according to people in pre-1900 either.
I guess. So what does she do about this? Is she bi? Does she like men? Could this be a thing?
No, she says no. But then proceeds to complicate things by calling him her fiancé in her poems.
Great. Getting a few mixed messages there, Renee.
Yes, but she very much did not like men. Would never have married him, though her mother thought that when she ran away and then returned home broke, that she was actually trying to elope with this French poet.
Mm-hmm. So if that wasn't the case, what was she doing running away like that?
Probably just trying to get away from her mother. The two did not get along very well. Renee always thought that her mother favored her sister, who she did get along with. Actually, she even served as a bridesmaid at her sister's wedding.
Well, so that's good at least. I'm glad she had some family to connect with, but it sounds like her mother is a source of trouble for her as she's growing up.
Yes, in fact, there is another time where she accidentally overdoses on chloral hydrate, and her mother figures that it's a suicide attempt.
Ooh, yeah, that could be rough. Was it? Or was it related to some sort of substance problem that she had?
She didn't yet have a substance problem. She would later on, but at the time she did not. She was starting to really get hooked on it, though.
So her mother was right to be worried.
Yes, though Renee interpreted her worry as her not wanting her to get a hold of her inheritance. Basically, Renee thought her mother wanted her money.
Did she?
It's difficult to tell. But anyway, it ends up at the courts, and Renee ends up with a court-appointed guardian because her mother had tried to get her committed to an institution because of the overdose.
Well, that sounds like the right decision to have someone else who Renee can kind of rely on to be an adult for her who is not going to be controlling.
Yes. She actually much preferred being with her court-appointed guardian who gave her an allowance and didn't really keep her under his thumb as much, so to speak.
Always nice when you're a 19th century sapphic to have a bit of freedom there, a bit of leeway, maybe some economic freedom in particular.
Yes, but she does try to patch things up with her mother. The reason she's presented at court in May of 1897 to Queen Victoria is to please her mother before she hightails it to Paris.
What? Just like, see, Mom, I'll be good, I promise, but also I'm going back to Paris.
Yes, where, scandal of scandals, she takes an apartment on her own, because she's now an heiress in her own right, she's 21, she has access to her fortune, but she refuses a chaperone.
Ooh, what does that mean?
She's basically living on her own with no one there with her. No female companion or parental figure or guidance.
Well, does she get a female companion?
No, but she does meet up with her friends, the Shaletto sisters, though in secret because of the whole scandal of not having a chaperone.
Ooh, so they can't be tied to her name right now because of how scandalous she is.
Yes, but she is introduced through them to another scandalous woman. Mm-hmm. Though not quite as scandalous as she would become.
Right, and who is this?
Enter stage left Natalie Barney, moping over a letter from Leanne de Pougy, who is off in the Iberian Peninsula with another protector, since her job was courtesan. And the letter is that the affair between them is once again off.
Oh, tragedy. Also, okay, not very scandalous, except that she's dating a courtesan. But anyway.
As we went through in her own episode, Natalie becomes more scandalous as time goes on.
Right. So, a momentous meeting between Natalie and Renee. What goes down?
So the Shaletto sisters had invited both of them to the theater that night. Natalie didn't pay any attention to Renee on the carriage ride there, but Renee was thunderstruck when Natalie entered the carriage. Many would call it love at first sight. Now, after the night is over and they're in the carriage again going home, Natalie, who has been moping over the letter from Leanne de Pougy, finally pays attention to Renee because the Shaletto sisters convince her to recite one of her poems.
What's it about?
Death.
Hot, am I right?
Well, you see, it grabs Natalie's attention, and it's the incongruousness of this woman with laughing brown eyes reciting a poem about longing for death.
Yeah, I mean, that really gets me going, too.
Well, Natalie's intrigued. And the two of them continue to meet in the company of the Shaletto sisters until the Shalettos leave Paris for winter. So the train has just left the station, and Renee asks Natalie to go ice skating at the Palais de Glace with her.
If you know what I mean.
It was just ice skating.
Uh-huh. Sounds like a cute date idea, though.
It was, though Natalie had to ignore all the courtesans who she had met at de Pougy's who were also there.
Did Renee know about this?
I would assume not yet. But from then on, they also studied ancient Greek together under Charles Brun, who Renee remains in touch with throughout her life, and occasionally later on complains about Natalie too, because she has this whole I like her, but I don't like her going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Natalie is a controversial figure.
Yes.
I do like it, though, that these Sapphic ladies do study ancient Greek together. That is very fun.
They knew euphemism.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Hey, girl, want to study ancient Greek later? I can translate some Sappho for you.
I can even be Sappho for you.
If you know what I mean.
There are several other escapades and adventures as well, including cross-dressing during Carnival to get into the Moulin Rouge, seeing a performance of Isadora Duncan that ended with the dancer nude on stage.
Shocking.
And the lecture where her poetry is being read. It's published under R.Vivian initially.
So that she can, like, with a masculine or, like, assumed masculine identity, people will take her more seriously.
Yes. It's actually why the lecturer praises this as a young man in love with his first mistress.
Mm-hmm.
And Renee and Natalie flee the room because they're about to burst into laughter. Because it's all about Natalie. Every poem.
I love it. Ugh, gay hijinks.
Yes, well, Natalie returned the favor in her book, Quelques Portraits Sonnets de Femmes. Some portrait sonnets of women.
That's sweet.
In fact, as we covered in Natalie's episode, many people actually thought she had been writing about men.
God, people will really always go the extra mile to assume a straight story is happening.
Yes. However, not all is well.
Oh no, how come?
Well, as we know, Natalie is polyamorous.
Oh, and Renee is not.
Yes, so at the time, Natalie is still with Eva Palmer, and then she also starts an affair with the poet Olive Custance.
Mm-hmm. Just for funsies.
Yes. So they're not particularly sexually compatible and relationship compatible.
Mm.
Though they do have a sense of humor, poetry, and the whole play-acting dress-ups or dramatics in common. There's photos of them in a Revolution-era dress.
Ooh, fun.
Now, as this continues, Renee does accompany Natalie to Bar Harbor and hang out with Eva Palmer.
Mm-hmm.
The two get along quite well. Renee might have had a crush on Eva, even.
Right, because everyone does.
Many people do. Fabulous redhead, as we covered in her episode.
Mm-hmm.
But the two mostly just study ancient Greek while Natalie goes out partying.
Right. Study ancient Greek, as we covered. Who knows what that means for them?
It was actually studying.
Uh-huh.
But no, Renee was not much for partying. She actually purposefully left her or lost her dresses
on
the ship over.
Oh, sorry, I can't go to your parties, Natalie. I don't have any fancy clothes. Just gonna have to stay here and study ancient Greek. Wow.
Though that ship over also included Natalie discovering Renee's drug habit, which was worrying.
Mm, yeah. No, and prefigures some sorry things to come.
Yes. But while they're also over, since Eva Palmer has been kicked out of Bryn Mawr College but still has a room there, she lets it to Barney and Vivian, who stay for a while.
Talk about alumni privileges.
Yes, so true. But anyway, while Barney is off attending lectures, Renee is hanging out in the graveyard writing poetry and may or may not have been drinking as well.
Love it. And if you're ever at Bryn Mawr, check out that graveyard behind English House. It is a good spot.
It is.
Whether or not you're drinking gin and reciting poetry.
But then Violet Schiletto falls ill.
Hmm.
And Renee is at her bedside as she's dying. And she's incredibly confused.
Oh no, how come?
While her friend and childhood crush is laying in the next room dying of typhus, which Renee is devastated about, she also misses Natalie terribly.
Mm.
And this horrifies her.
I can imagine. That would be some very conflicting feelings. You know that you should be at your friend's bedside as she dies, but yeah, if you also feel like you should be with Natalie Barney, who's not even good for you.
Yes, and Renee blames herself for being so caught up in her relationship with Barney and feels like she's ignored her friend.
That sounds like a lot of guilt.
It is a lot of guilt. And Violet dies, which does not help.
Yeah, no, oof.
So while Natalie is back in the U.S. because of her father getting wind of her activities and whole lot of scandal on that end, Renee breaks up with her.
Wow. I assume by, like, mail or something, so it's like a...
Yeah, she stops really answering her letters.
So not just break up by text, this is ghosting. She is ghosting Natalie.
So, Renee is in her apartment, still writing poetry. She's broken up with Natalie. Natalie is still in the U.S., unable to do anything at all.
Mm-hmm.
And Renee starts a new affair.
Oh.
With the Baroness Helen van Zulen van Nievelet, distantly step-related to Elizabeth de Grimmauld.
Of course, because everyone knows each other.
Yes. Natalie does not find out about this until she returns and tries to see Renee. Natalie is not impressed at her replacement.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, she calls the Baroness ugly.
Was she?
I would say she's no looker.
Oh. I'm sure she had a great personality, though. Was she good for Renee?
Renee found her to be more stable for herself than Natalie was, which I think was what drew her overwhelmingly to the Baroness.
Mm-hmm. Which, admittedly, Natalie was many things, but she was not stable.
Especially not when young. Because they were young. They were both in their early 20s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Natalie was still trying to figure herself out, and so is Renee.
However, Natalie, being Natalie, and the drama queen of all drama queens...
Right.
...decides she's going to win her back.
And how's she gonna do this?
So ensues many flamboyant displays.
Mm-hmm.
Including parading up and down the street on horseback in costume, riding by her window, including breaking out into impromptu races with anyone who tried to ride by her.
Wow. All right.
There was also the opera singing incident.
Right, the famed opera singing incident, the ye old boombox at the window.
Well, in this case, Natalie convinced a friend, the opera singer Emma Calvet, to dress up as street performers with her and stand under Renee's window and sing, "I've lost my Eurydice," while Natalie pretended to pick up coins that passersby were throwing at them, until Renee opened her window, upon which Natalie tossed up a bouquet that had a poem wrapped around it through her window.
God, she is so extra. Did it work?
No.
Oh, God. Poor Natalie.
You see, by this time, Renee has not exactly a companion, but sort of a governess. That's what she's called in a lot of the sources. She had originally been hired as a stand-in at book events, because Renee, by this time, not only has stopped using an initial and used a name, but it's the feminine version, so everyone knows that a woman has written all of these love poems.
Ooh. Ooh. How do people react to that?
It's Paris. She became a celebrity.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So they appreciated her work on its own merits before they knew that she was a lesbian. And it wasn't a tokenization thing. It wasn't like, oh, hot new lesbian writes all these poems. It's like, no, these are really good poems and written by a hot new lesbian.
But no, so this governess is the one who gets the bouquet and poem and returns them to Natalie, actually.
Well, that's good. I mean, I feel like if you don't want to get back together with your ex, it's nice to have, like, your PR person to just deal with it.
Yes, but it does not end there.
Of course not. It's Natalie.
She proceeds to send intermediaries to speak on her behalf, other people. Eva Palmer is one, which was a slightly better choice than this next one. She also sends Leanne DePugy.
Interesting. Now, did Renee know about Leanne's thing with Natalie before?
Oh, she does by this point.
Okay, so let's send my ex to talk to my other ex to get us back together. That sounds like a really great plan, Natalie.
It was basically, let me send all my other exes and sort of still together girlfriend in the case of Eva to my other ex because I want to get back together with her.
So how did that work out then?
It didn't work out well, but Leanne DePugy was a particularly bad move at the time.
How come?
Renee and Leanne didn't particularly get on well, but they did become sort of friends later on.
So maybe right now is not the best time for them, but at some point they would have their time to be friends. Yeah, a reminder that women don't always have to hate each other and compete. Sometimes we can be great. We just have to maybe be mature and ready.
So this fails.
Mm-hmm.
So Natalie sits down and writes a long poem. Je me souviens, I remember. And then convinces Eva Palmer to go to a Wagner concert in Bayreuth. And to convince Renee to go with Eva. Natalie also goes to this concert, but has a seat far away from them. During intermission, she switches seats with Palmer.
Oh my god.
And they talk.
And they talk?
Yes, and Natalie gives Renee the poem to read.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get back together.
Oh no, Renee, don't do this.
And then they go to Lesbos.
Of course. Of course. I'm assuming literally and metaphorically.
Yes. But things do not work out.
Mm-hmm. Really? You don't say.
Yes. And so they come back. Renee wishy-washies a bit. And then leaves her again. And so she writes a great deal. She's still sort of with the Baroness. And she travels a lot as well.
Ooh, where does she go?
She goes to a lot of places, including Egypt, Hawaii, and Japan.
Wow. A lot of different places.
Yes, she also has other affairs, including with a married woman, Cara May, the wife of a diplomat. It's actually portrayed in the short film The Touch on YouTube. The title of the film is taken from one of Renee's poems.
Ooh, that's fun.
She also had an affair with Emmeline de Lenson, another of the top courtesans of Belle Epoque Paris, and herself once the lover of Leanne DePugy.
Of course, because all of these women know each other.
It's one big circle. So many thorns.
God, yeah, I mean, lesbians are like that.
Yes. She also has an affair with the painter Romaine Brooks, though it ends by 1907, in large part because Brooks can't stand to hear so much complaining about Barney.
I mean, can anyone?
Yeah, Renee never really fully gets over Natalie. She also is going downhill. We've got alcohol, we have drugs, we have anorexia, we have very strange behavior.
Poor woman.
Yes, so she is friends with another writer, Colette.
As in Colette from the movie Colette, with Keira Knightley, my one true love.
Yes, also as in the Colette, who is another lover later on of Natalie Barney.
Because, of course, as we said, all these women know each other, sometimes biblically.
Yes. So Colette describes odd dinners, exotic alcohol galore, and very little food, in stuffy rooms with the windows nailed shut, and Renee leaving for some mysterious, demanding lover at odd hours, including in the middle of her own dinner parties.
Are we sure that this lover exists?
No, we're not.
Ooh.
There's speculation that it was the Baroness, but it probably was not. Some people think Renee would say or let people assume it was the Baroness. Others that it was someone else, or that it was just someone completely made up.
Mm-hmm. Right, and why would this be? Was this, like, her anorexia and her trying to get away from any food, or
Well, as Colette describes it, there is very little food and tons of alcohol, which Renee downed. Mm-hmm. Like, she didn't touch the food, she just drank.
Wow. Wow, poor woman.
There's also another story Colette tells of a few days before this amateur play Renee's going to be in, where she portrays Anne Boleyn at her execution, and they're getting clothes fitted. And Renee absentmindedly puts on Colette's coat. And Colette unknowingly makes the mistake of saying, "Oh, it almost fits you." Renee is horrified by this, disappears for 2 days, starving herself, comes back, portrays Anne Boleyn, and then after her part is over, promptly faints backstage from hunger.
God, poor woman. You really wish that they'd, like, good therapy at the time, because she needs help.
She really does. She tries to kill herself with laudanum in 1908. And it's then that her sister and the Baroness really notice how bad a shape she's in.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, they try with getting her doctors and whatnot, but there's a point where she's in bed and she gets a hold of some alcohol that paralyzes her throat or her larynx, something in that region. And this is how she dies in 1909, after a deathbed Catholic conversion.
Why? Why the sudden Catholicism?
Lots of gays and lesbians actually converted to Catholicism because of the whole you'll see your loved ones in the afterlife, while conveniently ignoring everything said about homosexuality.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because, I mean, I get that. They want to have some solace. And it sounds like particularly for her, her life was just full of awfulness. So she would want to find some way of connecting to people, if not in real time, then at least in the afterlife.
There's also the fact that Violet was a Catholic when she died.
Mm. So she thinks maybe, you know, my friend who I lost in her youth might return to me.
Yes, or I'll see her after I'm dead.
Right.
In fact, one of her poems is the inscription on her tomb. It reads, "Here the door through which I passed, O roses mine and thorns both mine, what matters now to me the past, who sleep and dream of things divine? My ravished soul from mortal breath, appeased, forgets all former strife, having from its great love of death, pardoned the crime of crimes called life."
Wow. That is dark.
Well, we have to remember, when Natalie met her, she was reciting a poem about death as well.
Yeah, she was just always goth, I guess, or emo or something.
I think she had a dark streak, but it wasn't really until, like, when Colette's describing her that she had really, like, gone downhill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so she was maybe always morbid to some degree, but whether she was, like, seriously depressed, like, intensely having problems.
Yeah, that was not her when she and Natalie met, like, she was described as very happy, like, laughing eyes sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, poor woman. You think, like, if she had been born now and she had had that kind of opportunity, that kind of wealth, and had a better social support system, like, you know, she could have maybe gotten help. She could have survived it.
Mm-hmm. So that leaves us with all of her writing.
Mm-hmm. Her legacy.
Yes, aside from writing about her girlfriend, which, by the way, both Natalie and Renee acknowledged that Renee was the better writer of the two.
Mm-hmm.
She was actually very prolific for such a short life. She wasn't even 40 when she died.
Wow.
So it's mostly verse, but also some prose. There's the novel A Woman Appeared to Me, where Natalie and Eva both appear with two versions of Vivian. And several short stories, including one about a woman who stays on a sinking ship with her pet wolf, rather than leave with the man who's been pursuing her despite her repeatedly saying no.
A lesbian mood.
And then there's the female historical and mythological figures that pop up. There's Eleanor of Aquitaine, Lilith, Andromeda, the woman in a Greek myth chained to a rock.
Hmm. Yeah, and seems apt.
Anne Boleyn, Cleopatra, Jane Grey. In fact, her pseudonym plays into this. So Renee is for rebirth, and Vivian is for the Lady of the Lake.
Wow. So yeah, so a lot of women who are involved in stories about being trapped or helpless or escaping terrible fates. And then the Lady of the Lake with her, you know, empowering people with her powers.
Just a whole lot of women.
Yeah.
Like every story, every poem.
Well, yeah, as one would expect. But specifically women with stories that can reflect hers in different ways.
And of course, Sappho is an influence.
Really?
Yes, she wrote 4 poetic plays about her and then did some translations. In fact, this is how she and Natalie end up befriending Pierre-Louis because of his Songs of Bilitis, which is a faked translation of Sapphic poems by one of Sappho's followers. So, specifically, Louis wrote a bunch of Sapphic poems and then claimed they were a translation of one of Sappho's followers' works.
Come on, dude. Don't do that to us.
There's also then the mystery of the poet Paul Riversdale.
Mm.
So, there's confusion over whether or not Renee was also Paul Riversdale, or if it was both her and the Baroness doing work under this name. So, Riversdale's poetry closely resembles Renee's.
Hmm. And his name is Paul, and her name is Pauline, right?
Yes, even Barney and Romaine on occasionally called her Paul. I'm assuming short for Pauline.
Mm-hmm. And was this like a gender nonconformity thing? Or was it just kind of a fun, cute, short nickname?
I don't think it has to do with gender nonconformity.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. I mean, she also liked to dress up, so.
Yeah, she had that in common with Natalie.
I've seen some pictures of her, you know, wearing some men's clothing, having some fun, but.
Yes, there's also photos of that play she did as Anne Boleyn.
Mm-hmm.
Now, other people have said that the Baroness's poetry isn't good enough to also be Riversdale's. And the thing is, Renee was also sort of asked about this while she was alive.
What did she say?
She never said for sure if it was another pseudonym of hers.
Okay. And no one came forward claiming that they were Paul Riversdale?
No.
Ooh, so the mystery remains. Leaving a mystery behind.
But remember, if you hear opera singing under your window, don't open it or a bouquet will fly through and hit you in the face.